Hey, this is Dominique Henderson, your CFP on YouTube, guiding you to a career in financial services. This episode originally aired on my YouTube channel, which you can find at www.youtube.com/theYouTubeCFP. Make sure you join me each week as I share with you information on how to become a financial professional and the things you should be considering as you navigate down this career path. Without further ado, here's this week's episode. Hey everybody, this is Dominique, your CFP on YouTube, and I got a really special guest today. I was able to grab some of the attention and time of Mr. Stephen Hughes of the No Money brand. We met on Instagram because that's the new Starbucks. And so I invited him on today to have a conversation because he is in front of the millennials and the generation Y and Z, the people that are going to inherit all the money that comes from the generation X and from the baby boomers. So what's going on, Stephen? How you doing today, man?
What's up? How's it going? Happy Tuesday.
I mean, can we? Yeah. Yep. Yeah, yeah. Happy Tuesday, man. I'm good with that. I am good with that. You are a busy brother, so I appreciate you kind of lending your wisdom to my audience today.
Yeah, I'm glad to be on. I love what you're doing, and so I'm excited to see what we jump into and how much we can cover for the next phase of financial advisors, you know?
Well, that's interesting. I want to jump right there, too. I'm going to follow you, because there's a lot to unpack here. I think it's fair to say you and I have an equal amount of passion in reaching this generation and the next with financial education, because I think you agree with me that financial education, financial literacy is the road to economic empowerment. But I always like to kind of start off with what shaped your passion for this? What shaped Stephen's money story?
It's funny, like I really got interested in money. I didn't go to college studying finance or anything like that, but I'm a first generation Jamaican American. And as I was growing up, you know, we had really humble beginnings. It was 8 of us in a 3-bedroom house, sometimes 10, depending on who was here from the country. And every now and then our lights would be cut off, water would be cut off. You know, we had different or we had some negative experience, I'd say, when I was growing up. And then I took those experiences and just doubled down on them when I got to college. So when I got to college, I made every financial mistake possible. I had 7 maxed out credit cards.
From t-shirts or from pizzas?
Pizzas, subs, like anything. You know, thinking about it, you're a freshman on college campus, you're hungry. Even if you have a meal plan, it's just you've never had this much access to food. And so, you know, I had 7 maxed out credit cards throughout my college career. I had overdraft fees to the point the banks closed my accounts and told me to go play with someone, you know, as far as other banks. I had 2 repossessions. I got evicted from my apartment. My credit score was a 385 at one point. And I decided that I should probably do some things different when it came to managing my money. And when I read a book called The Richest Man in Babylon and started, you know, making some changes, one thing I did after that was I went to a financial education workshop, and everybody in there outside of myself was an old white man. And everyone in there outside of myself were talking about HELOC mortgages. And I didn't even know what a regular mortgage was at the time. And so I just knew I had to do something different in terms of learning about money. And I started telling people my mistakes and showing them how I fixed them. And then I started No Money 5 years ago in 2014. And now in 2019, we've become like a premier organization that teaches college students how to think, talk, and interact with money positively.
Man, that's great. That's great. You got a lot of very intriguing rabbit trails for me to hop down. I'm trying to see which one I want to go down first, because I can't do all of them in the time that we have.
I got you.
Talk about, and I feel all the rights with saying this because of how long I've been doing this, the stale, pale, and male version of financial advice that we have right now. You're learning a lot interacting with the next generation of people that will consume financial services. I'm curious of some of the dialogues that and even what their money stories are and how they're viewing somebody like myself or one of my peers
that are coming to them and saying, hey, let me help you with your finances. Let me give you financial advice. What are their thoughts? What would you say?
Well, it depends on how that the intro of that conversation goes, really.
Okay.
Because for me, when I was trying to get a footing in personal finance and really just managing my money properly, I didn't want to follow the Dave Ramsey of the world. Actually, I still have, I've never read a Dave Ramsey book. I've never listened to a Dave Ramsey podcast. And while I'm sure he gives, I know he helps a lot of people and gives a lot of great advice for people. It just, I didn't think Dave had the experience that I had as a Jamaican American or as a young Black man trying to get his money right and what that looked like. And so I think in regards to young people that want to get their money right, whether it's this generation or the next coming up, as long as that conversation starts from authenticity and being genuine with a way to help, then, you know, people are open. But I would say that a lot of people in my generation have like very strong, and I don't know how this happened, but very strong bullshit detectors. And, you know, when somebody's coming to you, I think a lot of people say that they hate salesmen because of the experiences they've had in the past. But when someone's coming to you just looking to help, and that help turns into something of y'all working together and them paying you to help them meet their goal, it's a totally different onboarding or really prospecting than financial advisors just having lunches or hosting dinners with suits and ties and white tablecloth on the table and saying that I can manage your money, because a lot of people don't have the money to manage. So I think that's...
Well, let's unpack that, because I think you bring up a couple good points. What I want to kind of hearken on is, and we're not going to solve it today, but
yeah,
this mistrust, like there is a general mistrust is what I would kind of characterize it as. And I don't know, like what are some of the things that can be done? Like I actually coach financial advisors. That's another, you know, thing that I do. Yeah. And I'm always talking about the authenticity. And one of the ahas that I had that I share very candidly is that I was doing a podcast and I was hiding behind, you know, my audio. And I was like, wait a minute, I want people to invest their money with me. Like, why am I hiding?
Right, right.
Like, it was like an aha to me. So I was like, let me put myself out there. So, you know, I'm all over social media, but I guess kind of speak to that mistrust a little bit about maybe what we can do to fix that. Video is probably one way to do it. Maybe some other ways that you've heard or that advisors of tomorrow could adopt.
Well, I think the biggest thing with mistrust when we're talking about finances is the fact that we generally don't talk about money, like in specifics as a society. And the people that we're talking about, Generation Y and Z, grew up in households where their parents didn't talk about money, but struggled with money. And now they're struggling with money in their own households. Mm. So the biggest thing for like that authenticity and really coming to someone in an area where you can serve them and help them is connecting with them through stories. So we talked about the, stale pale males for a second, but after I had a workshop at in Myrtle Beach, there were some students. I had a workshop for about an hour and a half, and there were some students who mentioned to me after the workshop that one, they had no idea they had been sitting down for an hour and a half talking to me about money, because it went by faster because they were engaged, their activities, and two, that they wouldn't know who to go to. Like I specifically remember a student from Rutgers, and she was Panamanian, and she told me she didn't know who to go to in her city or around her university who would have had the same experiences that I've had, that, you know, I'm thinking about how to take care of my parents as an immigrant American. I'm thinking about how I can get a footing in finances when it comes to saving and eliminating debt. And, you know, these different experiences that I can share with stories that are real things that have happened to me, the real mistakes that I've made, real ways that I've turned it around, are huge when it comes to just being authentic and being able to help people.
Hey, Dominique here, and I hope you are really enjoying this week's episode. Look,
If you're a current or aspiring financial professional and you'd like to join a community of like-minded individuals that I'm sharing my 20 plus years of experience with, make sure you visit my website at www.djh-capital.com for more information. Now back to this week's episode. Maybe an interim step, because I've talked to a couple people that will be, those recordings will air at some point. But the point is maybe there's an interim step, like financial coaching is this thing that's been around maybe for the last good 5 years or so, maybe 10, but not heard of for 10, but definitely around and heard of, publicized for the last 5 years. Would you say Gen Y and Z are maybe more open to that construct and framework before they get to financial advice or investment management or wealth management, whatever you want to kind of call it? Or maybe not even that piece at all. Maybe they never graduate to that, but financial coaching is good enough. What are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, I think a mix of financial coaching and financial planning is good enough. And when I say financial planning, I'm making a distinction between financial planning and financial advisors who, in regards, financial advisors who may manage assets, so manage money for their clients, and mm-hmm. financial planners who are sitting down with their clients, getting paid a flat fee and creating a plan of, hey, this is what you should do with your money when you leave me. And maybe we should sit down next in the next 6 months or 12 months. So I think a lot of people in my age group and younger need financial planners or financial coaches to continue the work that the financial planner started. So having the plan and saying that, okay, I'm going to stick to this, but accountability is such a big thing when yeah. you're trying to either change a habit or, you know, manage your money better. And so I definitely think that our generation, because for a while we couldn't even talk to financial advisors, like we didn't have enough money. Right. And that's what a lot of people think. It's like, oh, I don't have 10,000. I don't have 25, 100, a million to even talk to a financial advisor. So this financial planner that says, hey, sit down with me for $350 and I'll show you what you're doing now and where you should put your money. And then a financial coach who's every month they're hitting you like, hey, this is the homework. Did you do this? Remember our financial goal. We're working towards this by this date. Are really important pieces of financial help and resources for our generation and the next.
No, I don't disagree with you. I think for a long time I've thought this, and I've kind of catered my practice. I just real candidly, I'm probably going to step on a ton of toes right here, but I love to be polarizing. I think that the paradigm of assets under management is probably not going away anytime soon because there's billions of dollars spent on marketing. However, the caveat is, you have to think as an advisor, and I've said this before to the advisors I coach, that it almost seems too good to be true for your value proposition to only be in asset management, asset allocation, portfolio rebalancing, and you're getting this humongous fee. Like, that's got to go away at some point. You might want to plan for that. And so for I think the takeaway to me is that more of the value proposition comes with the fact that, you know, as life happens, and my client is looking for experiences that fit into the narrative or the mosaic of what they're living and what's going on with them, whether that's aging parents or empty nesting like myself or whatever that is, that a planner, advisor, coach comes in and helps them through that journey, right? With the right financial decisions so that they don't end up making, you know, these huge mistakes that, you know, opportunity cost wise that are going to be way more than the fee that they would pay. Would you agree?
Definitely. Hands down. Yeah. Hands down. And I think that as we even talk about that, there are big companies that understand that financial coaching and financial accountability are huge pieces of what the next generation is going to need to even get on board with the financial planning or services company. Because I still remember, like, there was a company called LearnVest, and mm-hmm. They got bought by Northwestern Mutual. Yep. And you know, push to fully integrate them in their system. And LearnVest was, you know, doing a lot on the financial planning front, but they were doing so much on financial education, you know. And as we move, you know, closer to that, or closer to our end of the field where we are more likely to talk to a financial planner or a financial coach. I think that you'll see either acquisitions or full out programs and departments for these bigger companies.
Yeah, I find it interesting. The LearnVest Northwestern Mutual is a little interesting because insider in the industry, you're like, that doesn't seem like a good fit. And now we have this LearnVest brand that's gone that was doing such a great, job on the education. So you're almost kind of like, they cut them off at the knees and kept on going. That's neither here nor there. We'll talk about that later. I'm curious though, because I know that you, and we want to get a little bit more into some of the summits that you do and the brand that you have, but I know that you coach and train financial professionals on speaking. And I want you to talk about that a little bit, because I wonder, you know, kind of weaving in what we've just talked about, are you carrying any of that narrative into the coaching and the training that you do in a way of kind of helping tomorrow's financial advisor communicate better to the audiences?
Yeah, for sure. And it goes back to what I mentioned before, as the stories that connect people, especially our generation and the generation coming up, to someone who's telling the story. And, you know, stories are the oldest form of communication for us. And when someone tells a story to you, now we're talking about some workshops we've been to that are maybe that the free bank workshop that comes on college campuses, and the person walks in and they're a banker and they don't really know what's on the presentation either. They're just reading the PowerPoint and they say like, "Good morning, class." I said, "Good morning," like that everyone hates. I think that with speakers and financial professionals specifically, when you can connect someone with a story, it changes the whole dynamic. So for an example, like I'm working with an insurance agent, right? The most glamorous position ever. And
you gotta start somewhere, brother.
I'm working with an insurance agent, and when he's an insurance professional, like that's what he does, that's his bread and butter.
Yep.
But when he was speaking, he was telling me, like, you know, audiences don't stay with me, like I lose them, and you know, I'm not getting speaking engagements. I wrote this book, but it's not really popping. Yeah. And we sat down for like 3 hours and crafted his signature story. Mm-hmm. And now when he speaks, people walk with him out the room to figure out, hey, how can I get you to come to my school or organization? And the story, he tells me the biggest difference in how he even feels about the speaking engagement, his confidence in the speaking engagement, and delivering value to the people in the room, is the fact that he starts with a story, he sees that people are connected, and he's able to keep going. So your financial advisors, like, you have to figure out and really sit down with how you even got here. Like, why your background, the thing that you really had to change, why you jumped into financial advising, and how you've helped, you know, people from there, whether it's families or people that you know, because that's what people are going to connect to.
No, I totally agree. It reminds me of the Simon Sinek, start with why. It's like, if you don't know what, you know, why you're in this, or, you know, I got a lot of people that DM me and ask me about, you know, recommendations for this and yada, 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 career advice, basically. And what I tell them is, you know, what are you trying to build? What is it that when a prospect intersects with your brand, they go, "I want that," or let me learn more about that. What is that? And if your only hook is, "Well, I thought this would be nice because I like numbers, or I think I can make a lot of money," then it's too shallow to take you far in this industry, unfortunately.
Exactly. And you're not going to hang around either, because there's not enough money in the front end to be, you know, so.
This is true. So one thing I always kind of like to bring out, especially with a guest like you, Stephen, is that some people may call it looming. I think it's here, the student loan crisis, rising cost of education. There's really no, I don't think it's going down. I've got two at Prairie View right now, and all my money is going to my alma mater. I was joking with one guest, and he was like, "Man, you need to get one of those commemorative bricks."
You do.
Like, yeah. Yeah, two of those things.
A couple of them. There you go. A couple of them.
But anyways, what's your perspective on how students are dealing with this cost? Is it something they're even conscious of? Or like, are people really going, I need to have this type of career because I already know I'm going to have this amount of student debt when I come out and I need to be able to have a lifestyle? Or are they just kind of like, do.
We're definitely still in the do stage.
Okay.
Because thinking about it, we're still seeing a lot of students go to college because they were told that you should go to college. Because they want to go. And, you know, before they get to campus, 3 months before they get to campus, they have to raise their hand in a classroom and ask to go to the bathroom. And then they get to campus and they have the ability to sign tens of thousands of dollars in student loans. And we don't,
never thought about it like that. That's a good point.
And if for some reason, I don't think that we ever think about it like that. Like, we're not preparing students to be empowered decision makers when it comes to their money. And so when they get to campus and they know they need to be on campus to go to classes.
Yeah.
And to be on campus to go to classes, you didn't have enough scholarship, so you need to get a loan. And to get this loan, you need to sign your name here for this $5,000 that will pay for the rest of your bill.
Yeah.
And for a lot of students, and I'll tell you, for me, when I saw the numbers of the loans, as long as it took care of my bill, like, I was pretty good with that. I was like, okay, well, I want to be in college. I have to sign this loan to pay my bill. This is just what it is. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have the information or even the education to say, like, there's got to be a better way to do this. Or when I get out of school, let me work backwards to find out how much I'm going to be making to decide what I'm going to major in. Because, you know, even as a Jamaican American, you know, immigrant parents, they mostly want their kids to go be a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer.
Yeah.
And I'm none of those things. So going to school and studying human resource management and then coming out or dropping out of school in 2010 and jumping into sales where you have to build a book of business before you really start getting paid.
They were probably like, what are you doing?
Yeah, they were. They were like, so you're back in Columbia. Like, what's going on? What are you doing? And I kind of used the excuse of, oh, well, my little brother's still in high school, so I can help him out with this while I was trying to still get my life together. So,
okay, that was a good one.
I think that a lot of us, even not even just students on campus, but adults who are just leaving college or who have left college in the past 5 or 10 years are just now getting their footing to say, hey, this is how I want to make money.
Mm-hmm.
This is the type of money I'm going to make. And by then, they're already $30,000, $50,000, $100,000 in student loan debt.
So what would you, because this almost kind of sounds like a discussion that I've heard Gary Vee have, where, like, I don't even view college with the same value, and I don't want to unpack all of it right now, but 20 years ago when I graduated, it's not the same. So unless, to me, there's like probably 4 or 5 core vocations that need college.
Yep.
All the other ones, you got to flip a coin. So what's your take on like how people should finance their education? Like for instance, my middle son, he did 2 years of community college before he transferred to PV because it was that. Like, it's cheaper, dude. And right. I mean, I don't want to throw his business out, but like his sisters were more studious. Let's put it that way. So,
Total respect.
So the deal is like, what is today's student even thinking about those alternative ways? Technical school, vocational school, community college? Are they even thinking about that?
Only when we introduce those to them. Because even thinking about my mentee, he knew that he was supposed to go to college. His mother told him, you know, when you graduate, you're going to leave. You're either going to get a job or you're going to go to school. And so in his latter parts of his high school career, he wasn't the most studious person, but he's brilliant, you know, and the classroom didn't always show that.
Yeah.
But even with him making his college decisions, I told him, I said, well, the best thing that you can do right now is go to Midlands Tech, which is our technical college in Columbia, South Carolina, go to Midlands Tech for 2 years, knock out your gen ed, because you still don't know where you want to go to school and what you really want to focus on. Like, we all know that you want to do business, but what's the thing that you want to learn while you're in school? So he decided that he wants to learn computer science, and he wouldn't have thought about going to Midlands Technical College if we didn't sit down and talk about it. And he trusted me as a mentor to steer him in the right direction. So he thought about, okay, well, this might be a viable decision. He ended up going to a small four-year school. And I'm cool with that. I'm all the way good with that. But every time I talk to him, and this is, I think this is probably, now that I'm saying this out loud, this is probably not the same relationship that every mentor has with their mentee. But every single time that we eat lunch every month, because he gets back in town, we calculate his net worth. And then we also talk about like money decisions that he has coming up and how he feels about them. We also talk about what to do to make money now. And these conversations aren't happening in like everyday households, much less.
They're not happening enough. Yeah.
Much less a mentor and a mentee talking about this. But I asked him, I said, in the last time that we sat down last month, I said, how much do you have in student loans? And he said, I think I have $6,000. And I said, okay, well, let's do the math. I think your net worth, like, you're about to watch it go into the negative, which is an experience that I never had, because I never calculated my net worth before it even got to negative. Yeah. But him seeing that, he said, well, I need to get this off. Like, I'm trying to get back to zero. So I can,
you know,
so now it's a student who's thinking about his net worth in his freshman year, how he can pay for college, like through student loans or grants or scholarships mostly. And
he's thinking about it more intelligently.
Exactly.
Instead of letting it happen to him. I totally agree. I think the proactive approach is the way we need to be with this. Man, you're just like, we could be here for days or hours. So talk about the No Money brand and exactly what you're doing. I think what you're doing is great, because if your brand and the summits can help people like yourself have these type of conversations, I would love for them to happen at home. My wife's actually in education. She's an assistant principal, and Texas is one of the states that have financial literacy in the curriculum, but it's not required to graduate. I almost think that it should be required to graduate in all cases, because that is what forces these conversations. And right now, full disclosure, the pushback in the Texas legislature is that the teachers are like, well, we're not qualified to talk about finances. Well, it's like, all you have to do is poll the community. People like me will show up. I mean, you got junior achievement. You got all kinds of stuff. Like, that's not an excuse. But all that to say, I got on my hoppy horse just for a little bit. All that to say, how often do the summits happen? And what is kind of like the roadmap or the framework for how you conduct them?
Yeah. And for the people who are just listening right now, like, I am 100% in agreement with you. You could probably see it in my face if you're watching the video. But two things I want to say before I kind of jump into what No Money does and how often we have the summit. One, before I forget, I told my mentee, and I think for college students across the board right now, the most valuable thing of going to a college campus is building your network. So there's that. And then the other thing that I wanted to mention, as you mentioned, with high schools and middle schools making it mandatory to take a personal finance class, most teachers are not going to feel confident or empowered to teach the class. And I did a survey in one of my local school districts, and there were some teachers who were asking the principal for advances on their check. So you're thinking, like, do I want this teacher teaching my student about money, because they don't have the confidence to even talk about it? But
yeah, wrong incentive. The education program is negatively incentive in ways. So
No, I understand. And so when we're talking about No Money, we focus on creating workshops on college campuses to teach them about money, but all of the workshops are culturally responsive. And really, that's just my way of saying that if I'm going to an HBCU campus, like, I'm sending a facilitator like me or someone else from my team who has experience familiar to the group that we'll be talking to. Yeah. Or if I'm going to a a traditional college campus, I'm not sending a facilitator that is 50 or 60 because I want someone who is closer to the person's age so they can get that peer-to-peer type learning, you know, popping in a college classroom and feel like they can ask all the questions they want. Yeah. And so those workshops happen all the time across the country, and we're working with more colleges and universities, and anyone can go to nomoney.org. It's K-N-O-W. And I usually spell it out at the beginning because people are saying, well, this company's called No Money. Why would I want to talk about, you know what I mean? So yeah, it's K-N-O-W, but
phonetics, boy, I tell you.
There you go. But so No Money, like I've wanted to create a summit for the past 5 years. Mm-hmm. And this year, like all the stars aligned where I could actually do it. I can invest the money and the time and get partners to help me pull it off. Yeah. And so earlier this year, we had the inaugural Bankroll Summit where we really wanted to focus on getting black college students to break up with broke and to understand how to manage their money, how to get rid of their debt after they leave school, and how to make money so they can, one, not have to pay for their degree, and two, start a business if they want to after school. And the summit happens once a year, every April. In 2020, it'll be April 1st and 2nd. It'll be a 2-day event. And in the fall of next year, I guess this is like an exclusive, but in the fall of next year, we're going to be rolling out Bankroll, like mini Bankroll tours, where we'll go to college campuses that can't make it to the money conference, the big money conference, and have like a shortened
day. Like a roadshow.
Yeah, like a shortened day of money education where it may be 3 or 4 hours instead of 8 to 10 hours where students, you know, can be on campus. They don't have to pay for the travel and all these different things. But
yeah,
Bankroll Summit and even yesterday, I was just talking to a parent who came up to me and found me. It's like, my student went to a conference this year. They haven't stopped talking about it. Is there a way you can organize something like it? And I said, tell me about it. And she started describing Bankroll Summit.
That's great.
I think your student attended Bankroll Summit, actually. So she said, yeah, that's the name of it. That's actually the exact name of it. So
that's great. That's, you
know,
great.
I think having those experiences with our community and, you know, parents to see that their students are changing, like they're making things different, like they're taking action when they leave, and we're providing the information to them where they can take the action is like my favorite part. And so we're gearing up for 2020. And we're also gearing up for more workshops. We have a program with No Money called No Money on Campus that we do all the financial education out of. So we stay pretty busy, but we want to get busier.
Yeah, no, that's great, man. I have as I continue to build out my network, I have a couple people in mind that I want to hook you up with because my alma mater, which I'm very proud of, now has a financial planning minor that allows people to sit for the CFP exam. So they're one of three HBCUs that have the board registered program. So we're just trying to get awareness. Matter of fact, I was just down there last week hosting a mini summit, a panel on money matters and just getting people aware of the profession and what you can do inside the profession, as well as some money habits that they need to be adopting. So financial education, financial literacy, we got to do more of it because as I say all the time, my industry is notorious for extracting rents, but I don't know how good they are in providing the value from the rents that they extract all the time. So
that's one for you. Like, I'm going to write that one down.
You can borrow it, my friend.
Yeah. Same thing with the bathroom and the college campuses joint. Like, just give me credit 3 times. And then after that, it's yours.
Yeah. I love it. Well, so we connect with you. What's your Instagram handle? How do we find you on social media?
Yeah. People can find me personally. I'm No Money Steve. So that's K-N-O-W-M-O-N-E-Y-S-T-E-V-E. You can find No Money at No Money Inc. K-N-O-W-M-O-N-E-Y-I-N-C. And you can also follow Bankroll Summit as we're gearing up for 2020.
Yeah. So everybody listening, everybody watching, make sure that you follow him on social media. Steve is doing a lot of great things, and we appreciate you, brother. I think you're making your deposit in the world, making yourself memorable.
That's the goal, man. Stories and impact. That's the goal. But I appreciate you having me.
Oh, man, this is great. This is so much fun. We have to have you back, and I appreciate your time.
Sounds good, bro.
Well, that wraps up this week's episode, and I hope you were able to glean at least one takeaway that will help you on your path. You know what? I'd really love to hear what it was that I said that may have helped you. Feel free to drop me an email at info@dj-capital.com. That's info@dj-capital.com. One last thing, my friend. It would really help the podcast if you would leave a review on the platform that you're enjoying it on. I'd really appreciate it, and it will help more financial professionals like yourself find out about what we're doing here. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.